Hey everybody, I'm Will Alexander. Welcome to Dog Show Tips, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and ProPlan. Today on the interview chair, we have none other than Sally George. Sit back and relax and let's listen to Sally. Hi, everybody. Will here with the interview chair this week. Our guest is Sally George, retired professional handler and terrier judge, and a smattering of herding dogs, I believe, or if Bichons and Center Schnauzers.
Other stuff, yeah.
How are you, Sally? Stuff.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good to see you. Look happy. Look healthy.
On the right side of the turf, as they say.
Perfect. Okay, let's just get right into it then. Tell me how you got started in the sport of dogs.
Well, in the sport, you know, I was kind of born. My family was always dog people. We were raised, even before I was born, my parents talking to me about their old Kerry Blue and their Sealyham Terrier. And I had and the first dog I remember was a Norwich Terrier. I used to carry a picture of myself when I was about 18 months old with my little Norwich Terrier sitting next to me. Her ears were like a bunny rabbit. She was as tall as me. But she was a Norwich. As we grew up, they wound up with a standard poodle, and we had a couple of litters of puppies, and I started showing in obedience. That's where I started.
Did your parents show in confirmation?
First thing was obedience. I took our 10-year-old standard poodle, poor thing, and trained her and put a CD on her. She could almost not see that well by the time I was done, but she did it. And the first dog, I mean, people don't know, you know, I started out not in terriers. I started out fooling around with obedience. And the first dog, purebred dog that I bought myself was a Great Dane. Wow. And I also put an obedience title on her. We lost her to bloat, which was my first introduction to that nasty thing. Then I started looking at terriers. So
how old were you at this point?
17, 18. I looked at standard schnauzers, miniature schnauzers, and Irish terriers. Those were the three breeds I was considering, and found that I couldn't get my hands on an Irish terrier or a standard schnauzer. And so I was quickly shuffled down to the minis, which I could find, and got connected with Richie and Aileen Santo, who are still breeding Kerry Blues back there in the Northeast. And they had miniature schnauzers back then, and they put my hands into some nice ones, and I learned how to groom, and I learned how to battle it out with the big deal schnauzer people in the Northeast, and I liked it. I liked showing dogs. It was fun. So, and that was strictly hobby. At the same time, I was working in a grooming shop, so I was learning how to groom dogs and how to handle dogs on a personal, you know, how do you deal with misbehaving dogs? How do you get them to stand still and make them look like something? And I opened my own little shop, and a couple people brought me some nice dogs that were bought as pets, you know, and I'm looking at it, it's a pretty nice dog. And I'm going to the dog shows and looking around at the other, it's a pretty nice dog. Do you ever think about showing it? And so I talked them into letting me take their dogs, and I was not charging them. I wasn't doing anything. I was just taking them along. And I took a soft-coated Wheaton bitch that was bred by Emily Holden, and she didn't particularly want her shown because she had some genetic issues behind her. Well, these people weren't interested in breeding. So I took her out to the shows, and I won a sweepstakes with her. And I remember Stebbins, I can't think of what his first name was, who was the rep back there, yanking me out of the sweepstakes. You're a professional handler.
Monroe Stebbins.
You are a professional handler. I said, I am not. And he said, oh, yes, you are. Give the ribbon and the money back. You are a professional. And I said, seriously? So at that point, I said, well, if I'm that damn good, I might as well just hang up a shingle then if I'm so good that I'm getting thrown out. So that was when I started showing. And I carried a very small string because it was more like a hobby for me at that point, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can remember Joan Huber saying, well, do you want to be a professional handler? I said, I don't know. I think it might take the fun out of it. I don't know if I really want to turn pro and do it full time all the time, but ultimately, obviously, I did. So I took my little baby string and I was showing a Kerry Blue Terrier for a gal back there. And she said, you know, our roving nationals in Dallas. And I like the judges. What do you say we go to Dallas? And I said, I've never been any further than I could drive in my little car from northern New Jersey. I don't know about going to Dallas.
Oh, so you started in New Jersey.
Yeah. That's where I grew up. That's where I started, in the Northeast, where you could get to three different choices of shows in a 3-hour drive.
Yeah, you get to even more now. It's crazy.
Then you get transplanted to the West Coast. It's like you have one choice in 12 hours, or you can go 24 hours. But at any rate, this was my first airplane trip. So I went down to Dallas and, I took one or two wire fox terriers, this Kerry Blue Terrier puppy, and a couple of miniature schnauzers that I had bred, and went down there. And in the fox terrier ring, I bumped into one Mark George, and I beat him 3 days out of four, and he took notice of me. And we sort of had a long distance romance. We made money back then. You paid by the minute on the telephone. Boy, did we spend money on the phone.
How old were you two at that point?
Late 20s, maybe 30, late 20s. Anyway, old enough to connect. So he flew out to some shows on the East Coast and we packed up and went together. And then I flew out to some shows on the West Coast and we packed up and went together, and we decided this was good. This was a good fit. So I moved to the West Coast then. And we hung up a shingle, as they say. And he was showing at that time his Scotties and Westies for Jim and Betty Boso. And he had several other clients, but that was his main thrust. And I came with, I think I brought a Bichon with me. I was showing a Bichon for some folks on the East Coast. They said, yeah, try him on the West Coast. So I brought him out with me, and I can't remember what all else I brought, mostly my own dogs, I guess. My Irish Terrier and my miniature Schnauzers, because I finally got an Irish after several years of breeding minis. I said, no, I still like this breed. So I got an Irish bitch from Marion Honey. And she was a baby sister of the three brothers. I don't know, for people that remember Irish Terrier history, there was a time when Woody had a Rock Ledges McMichael, who was the best in show winner on the West, and Ricky had the Irishman's Mr. Rock Ledge, I think was his name. Ricky was down in Louisiana then. And Bob Clyde had the third brother, which was Bro Brendan, up in the Northeast. And they were all cleaning up all around the country. And then they'd come together for Montgomery weekend and Westminster weekend, and it was electric. It was wonderful to watch them. And I sat, watched that. I said, I really want one of those. And Dan Kiedrowski, remember Danny? Dan Kiedrowski called Marianne, and he said, you need to sell this girl a dog. So she did. She sold me a little bitch puppy from the last repeat breeding of that. And she was winner's bitch at the National, and she was my first group winner. So that was my Irish start. And I had them continuously until 2 years ago. I had something that came down from there all the way down through the years until 2 years ago. We put down our last Irish bitch. She was 15. So now I'm Irishless, and it hurts. I can tell you that's a breed I really love.
Yeah, you still have dogs, Sally?
I've got a pair of Griffs, Brussels Griffons.
Everybody has Griffs now.
I've had them about 15 years now, and Mark said to me, you know, you used to have real dogs. Now you have these. I said, I like a 100 crate I can pick up in one hand and walk along.
I go and visit Adam in the passenger seat of his truck. There'll be four Griffs, you know?
Yeah, right. I've loaded enough crates through the years. I don't need a 400 crate. I'm good.
Exactly. I understand things. That.
So
you guys are together now, and you have set up shop. Are you in the kennel now?
Not in Sonoma. Okay. Mark leased a kennel, and I love these kids. This isn't good enough for me. We leased a kennel and we lived in a camping trailer for 2 years. You know, that was what we had. We had a place for the dogs, but not for us. And it worked. We were happy. When they really didn't want to renew the lease anymore, then we started seriously looking for a kennel. And it was about the same time we got married. I can't even remember whether we got married first or got the kennel first. But
what year was that?
87. It was just about the same time anyway. We bought the kennel and then went full out and started showing for Mrs. Vogels, Mr. Melville, a lot of the good people that we showed for through the years and had a lot of success, I'd say.
What was your first big dog when you were together?
Probably the Westie of the Bosos. For me, it was a cutting edge thing. I mean, we had several good dogs at the same time. We had the Westie that was the white Bar Geronimo's son. Glenn Finnan's Something Dandy that Jim and Betty Boso owned, who was the sire then of Manly, Holy Roots Hoopman of Shelley Bay, that we did so well with. And he won the group at Santa Barbara back when Santa Barbara was a really big deal. Mark said, "Do you know how big a deal this is?" I said, "I do. I just moved to the West Coast, but I know this is a big deal." And we were showing also two Scotties, the Scotty Bitch, both for Barbara Desay, Lovey, Champion San Greg Sweet Love, who was the first Wheaton to win a Best in Show in like 50 years or something like that. And Mark kind of put Wheaton's back on the map. They had sort of fallen from grace, and he put them back on the map. And then the Foxmoor, Champion San Greg's Foxmoor that he showed after that. So those two dogs were both Best in Show winners. And so we got going with all of those. And then the Wheaton came on the scene. Harry, champion, song and dance man. And he definitely put a stamp on me.
You know, for sure he did.
Yeah.
Never seen the ads up here in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, he was a wonderful dog. He was a wonderful dog. And a mutter. That's what I remember. His first Best in Show, it was pouring down rain. And he said, "I can do this. Don't put me in the sun. Put me in the mud."
How did Harry come about? How did you pick him as a puppy, or did you?
Well, Cindy and Jackie knew they had pretty nice dog, and they wanted to show him. And they'd shown, we went to shows in Colorado, and we were set up, and she asked me to come look at this puppy. She just came over and saw me. And I guess Gay Sherman Dunlop had suggested to Cindy that I had an idea how to show, because she had seen me show the Wheaton back on the East Coast, the very first one that I showed, which was sired by her dog, Doc. Which was Harry's, those were half siblings. Look at that. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Well, you love when it all comes back.
Yeah, right. So she suggested that I might be able to handle it. And Cindy was kind of just casting around, thinking about a handler, whether she wanted to send her dog all the way back to the East Coast, which is where most of the Wheaton people were, or whether she wanted to keep him out West or whatever. And Gase told her that I probably could do a job for her. And so she introduced herself to me and brought me over to look at this puppy. And I think he was about 7 or 8 months old. And he was a nice puppy. I have to be honest. I did not foreshadow what was to come with him. But I knew he was a whole lot nicer than the Wheaton that we were trying to special at the time. That much I knew. And I said, "Yeah, he looks like he's got a lot of," and he was a puppy. He had not been shown at all. And so she said, "Well, let me think about it." She called me back after that. And she said, "Well, the rotating national is going to be in Sacramento." So that really seemed like a fit, since we were out here anyway at NorCal Terrier. And I don't remember if we showed him anywhere before that weekend, or if that was the very first time he walked in the ring. I do remember she messed up the entries for at least 1 or 2 days. He wasn't entered every day, but he was entered, I believe it was the rotating national. Elaine Young gave him Winner's Dog. And I took him back in. I stayed on him for the breed. And I took him in, and she went through all the specials and was sorting through everybody, and had him at the very front of the line. And then she started walking in circles in the ring. She said, "I'm afraid I've lost my Winner's Dog." And everybody turns and goes, "Hell." She said, "Oh, well, there we go." So he won the breed that day. But I love that, because she didn't remember that he was the class dog until she'd already decided he was the best. So that was fun. That was the start. And he was off and away. I mean, he was an exceptional dog for his time, especially. He was a stand-up show dog, and he had four good legs. So you kind of hang a piece of liver in front of him and say, what do you think? And he said, I think I'm wonderful. And he was.
Now, he won the group in New York, didn't he?
He did. He won the group at Westminster.
Yeah, yes, what year was that?
89? 89. Well, that might not be right. Don't hold me to that. It was, okay. It was a long time ago.
Cindy calling me and saying, that's wrong date.
Yeah, it might be. I'm trying, it could be 89. I could find it. I could look it up. That's right. I have it here somewhere, but I don't.
It was exciting, though. I remember watching.
It was very exciting. It was very exciting. Bill Burgum judged. I remember talking to a East Coast handler that I knew pretty well before the group, and they said, what do you know about this guy, Bill Burgum? And I said, I like him. He's kind of a straight shooter. I really like him. He said, I think he'll just do whatever he wants. He said, does Peter automatically win? No, I don't think anybody automatically wins under him. After the group, I said, oh, he thinks I'm a real full of it. Yeah. So that was fun. And then our great trip to the ready room with the Doberman, the Andy Linton show, went best in show. And he went to, I'm trying to remember, he went to NBC, I think, and we went to ABC. All the losers went to ABC. The six group winners that did not go best in show went to ABC. And we're sitting in their green room was occupied because they had some sort of a wild cat. I can't remember if it was a serval or something. It was a wild cat that was there. And so they said, we're not going to put the dogs and the cat in the room together. So so we're all sitting there in our moment of glory in a storage closet with boxes stacked around us. And we're looking at each other going, yeah, we've really made it to the top now, haven't we? We're in the storage closet. But, wow. It was a bonding moment. Bobby Peebles had one with the poodle, and Pat Craig Trotter had one with her elk hound, and Ann Boley had Kermit, the poolie. Yeah, it was fun. Fun times.
Andy, that was Andy's first, that was the bitch, right?
That was the bitch that bloated on her way to the garden that year and tried to die before the show. Wow, yeah.
That was incredible.
It was Indy, yes.
Yeah. So what after Harry, what came then?
Oh my goodness, what came then? A parade of dogs. A parade of dogs. We had many good Westies, good Scotties, good clients, good Wheatons. We had a good run. Cindy, of course, had branched out from Wheatons and had some Norwich and Norfolks and Welsh, and her mother took up the Welsh. And so we finished some nice dogs. And I remember looking at something for Cindy that she was asking about showing next. And I said, this isn't good enough for you. She said, well, how good does it have to be? I said, better than Harry. She said, I don't think we're going to get there.
Hard act to follow.
Quite that good. I remember I really wanted to have get a best in show on one of Harry's kids, because I just felt like he deserved to be a best in show producer on top of being a best in show winner. So we showed that a dog that Elena Landon bred that Cindy and Jackie backed, which was Dubloon's Master of Illusion. And he got the best that I wanted for him. And
I recognize that name as well. So
she's gone on to do quite well without any handlers.
Yes, she has. She sure has.
She is a really good breeder. And, no more obviously than the fact that she had some health issues with the line that produced what she had, and she kind of discarded and started all over again and then produced this dog that she's winning like crazy with now. I mean, she takes what there is and works it into being a good breeding program. She's really good at it.
Oh, for sure. She's always competitive. That's for sure. So,
yep.
Over the years, you were in dogs from 17, if not earlier.
Yes.
Who would you consider your mentors over the years?
Oh, many, many mentors.
Yeah.
Annie Clark.
Some probably don't even know it.
Annie Clark was absolutely, it broke my heart to lose her. She was a backbone, could bounce anything off of her, really. Bobby Fischer taught me how to do flat work in his setup after a show one time. Ricky helped us. You know, Mark and I both came up on the outside school. We didn't work for anybody and apprentice with anybody, so we had to pick it up in dribs and drabs. Mm-hmm. And it probably is a slower way to do it, but a lot of people had to help us in order for us to get there, you know? And, I remember Paul Edwards helping me with a poodle trim when I wanted to learn to do a poodle. Rick Kashudian critiqued my work over and over again. Sometimes I wanted to slap him. He was frustrating me, but he would always notice when something was right. You know, he'd tell you when something was right.
That was funny about Rick. Even with dogs, he could be sitting there at ringside. You know, someone came up to him and said, "What do you think of this dog?" You know, "That's a great dog." But if he approached you, you knew he meant it. So,
well, I used to hate to show him in the ring because I don't know if I should say it. Yeah, he always seemed to have another agenda. But there's nobody in the world that I would love to have find a dog back in the expense in the setup, because he'd come out and he'd just say, that one there. And he'd find it every time. But you put him in the ring and there was like too many other things happening. And it's like, okay.
But yeah,
he was a really, really good dog man and an excellent trimmer.
Let's just say, You had a few apprentices yourself, obviously, assistants.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, I just got together this past weekend with Dolores Stills, who she's an accountant full time, but she takes dogs on the weekends still. And mm-hmm. she was the one that bathed and dried Harriet 52 million times on that Westminster weekend. She worked for us then. And it's funny because she remembers him differently than me. She said, "You know, he used to hate me." I said, "Really?" She said, "Well, I'm the one that always had to match him before he went in the ring to make sure he didn't get in the ring." And she said, "He didn't like that very much, so he didn't like me." So she's hung on and she's done well, on the level that she's doing. I mean, she's had some group winning Staffy Bowls and stuff. But she stays local and picks up dogs on the weekend because she's got a full-time job. Sure. Michael Lynch is still hanging around, bless his heart. he's now become fairly proficient in Lakeland Terriers. He's breeding and showing Lakelands and doing quite well with them. He's been an on-again, off-again. He's always a dog person, but he's an on-again, off-again dog handler. He's also been an audiologist. He went back to college. Wow. He's been a special ed teacher. He works in the school system. He does all kinds of things, but he's always a dog person all the way through. And he's been covering my dogs, so I'm allowed to travel. He's had some health issues that have been holding him down, and he's not been able to work, so he's been hanging around and helping me out. Adrian Gioni's managed to make a pretty good spot for himself over there in the valley. He's doing all right. Travis, I don't know if Travis is still handling now or not, but he was up in the Northwest for a while. Travis
Lincoln. I actually just saw Travis. I saw Travis. I did a seminar in Seattle, and he was there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had some good people. Of course, Chris Burke, who we lost 2 years ago. Chris worked for us on and off through the years, and loved him. Loved him to pieces. It's hard to imagine I'm losing people that were younger than me. This is not supposed to happen. No.
Yeah. It's tough.
And the older we get, the more people we let go every year. And there's too many of them. Too many of them.
We lost Jimmy Mitchell.
I know, just the other day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough one.
Yeah.
It's a good guy. There's a lot of good guys and gals.
So when did you start judging, Sally?
Well, first of all, when
did you retire?
It all happened together. Okay. When my kids came on the scene, you may or may not recall, we had some health issues with the first Edward, who had to be rebuilt, had a bazillion surgeries before he even turned 2 years old. But we struggled through that, bounced back. We took some time off, but we bounced back and came back to showing dogs again. And the second kid is Luke, and Luke was born with something called Prader-Willi syndrome. And that is just a nasty disorder, which has an eating disorder with it, developmental disability. It's a lifelong challenge. And we packed him along and with babysitters and went to the dog shows again for a while. But when Luke got to school, they kept calling me when I was on my way to a dog show saying, you know, we don't have an assistant today. We don't have an aide today. We're not going to be able to keep him in school. Can you come in and help us? And I said, well, no, I'm in Portland. And I said, well, how about tomorrow? I said, yeah, no, I'll be back a week from Tuesday, you know? And it tore me up. And I just said, okay, you made a choice. You're going to be a parent. You can either be a parent or a dog handler, but obviously you can't do both at the same time. So I hung it up and said, okay, that's it. And stayed home. And I applied shortly after that for the first half of the Terrier group and the odd breeds that I thought were a good idea. I think I told you, I don't know if we said on the film though, but initially when I applied, I went for half the Terrier group and five breeds that I thought would have bigger entries, like Corgis and Portuguese water dogs. And so they didn't want that. People, the clubs really wanted somebody who would do the group. So I finished out the group as soon as I could after that. And then I got involved in raising kids, running a kennel, and Mark's health started to decline. And I just didn't pursue it. I mean, I probably judge two or three times a year. I don't judge very often. and I didn't pursue it. I didn't go out and do the education and continue to apply and continue to pursue it. And things just went along. Well, now the kids are out of the house and Mark's gone. And so I think it's time for me to kick it back in gear. So I'm ready to submit an application for some more herding breeds.
That's a good idea. So you have the full Terrier group and you're going to go, you're going to try to get the herding group next.
Then. The herding group. And then I don't know what I'll do after that, but there'll be at least one more group, maybe working, maybe non-sporting, maybe toys. I don't know.
We had a great day. Might as well be working.
Right. Well, Clay told me go for the working group. You have bigger entries. I said,
okay. Now they always tell me that too, Guy. They always want working judges.
Okay. I don't know. You know, I remember 10, 12 years ago, somebody saying, I asked them, what's the hardest group to hire for? They said the Terrier group. And I said, what's after that? And they said herding and non-sporting, but apparently that's changed. So I don't know. Maybe I need to interview some more people and find out which direction I should go. Cause I remember when I was showing Beardies for Dick Schneider and they had a roving national and they brought some dogs out that they just didn't have anybody. I said, sure, I'll come down and do them. So I came over and did ringside pickups basically at the national for him. And I remember his wife saying to me, you must really love bearded collies to come out here and do this in the middle of the week on your day off or whatever it is. I said, you know what? I really just like dogs. I really do. So I have at least a couple of breeds in each of those groups that I really adore and would be very happy to be in. And I could go any direction. I mean, I've bred the Griffs. I've had toys there. I've lived with standard poodles and done obedience with them. I have it in there. And the herding group, there's just a lot of them I like. So
yeah, I'm the same way. If I was rich, I'd probably have one of each, you know?
Yeah, it'd be easy to be a collector.
Yeah. Like right now I have an Irish Setter, two Beagles and a Bouvier. So
there you go.
That's enough.
I thought I was ready for Bouviers, but they've changed them from a low entry breed to a bigger entry breed. Now I got to get more education. That's one of the frustrating thing to me about the judge's education and filling out these forms is the stuff that I really learned from doesn't count. You know, when I was coming up in the Northeast, I would set up in a grooming tent next to all the handlers in the Northeast, because that's the way it is. Everybody doesn't have their own individual space. And I'd be set up next to Roy Holloway doing Beaucrest Ruffian. And I remember that dog. And then when I was showing out here, Kenny Rensick broke the record. I remember asking him, how does Roy feel about you breaking his record? He said, well, he gave me the last best in show, so I think it's okay. And then Corky was showing Iron Eyes out here. I said, none of this counts. First of all those guys are dead. I can't get them to sign off on a piece of paper. And so now I need to go find something to put on a piece of paper to submit. And I mean, I showed and finished four or five Bouviers. I've got pictures. I've put them in coat. That doesn't count either. It's like, you know, that's how you really learned it, you know?
And so, it's ridiculous. I have this conversation with Wayne almost weekly. But yeah, it's hard.
It's just so frustrating. So frustrating. And then you try and go do a judge's education thing. And I will leave the breed absent for you. But I went to a relatively small breed and they had a roving out here. And I said, do you have any judge's education? No, but you can come talk to us. We've got breeders who've been in this for a long time. So I go and I sit, and there were back-to-back specialties. There was the local specialty and then their roving. So I sat, I connected with this person in the morning and I said, okay, can you tell me about this specific feature of your breed? It says they must have it, but it doesn't really describe it. What does it look like? She says, oh, just look around. Everybody has it. Okay, that doesn't clear it up, but okay. So then I sat down and watched the judging and I went to the other guy and I said, well, your standard calls for really good drive behind. And I said, I'm looking at your dogs and a lot of them look like they're kind of stiff behind. Do you think that's something that your breed really needs to improve on? And he just looked at me blankly. He said, well, no, they have lots of drive. Just hold the leash. They'll drag you right down the street. Oh, geez. Why am I wasting my time? But I got them the sign. I've got the paper. Maybe I could teach them about their breed. I
don't know. Exactly. It's frustrating.
It is.
What would you do if a youngster came to you and said they wanted to be a professional handler? What kind of advice would you give them?
Who have a backup plan, because unfortunately, I think our sport is not going to last 50 years at the level that will support professional handlers.
Yeah.
I see the demise, and it's heartbreaking is what it is, you know? But, you know, the animal rights people have done a really good job banging on purebred dogs and breeders, and we have not stepped up to it. And I don't know, there are things that we could do better as breeders, as, you know, as purebred dog people. It's still easy for a novice person to go to a dog show and be brushed off and ignored and treated like they're stupid. And it's not healthy for the sport. People need to
welcoming, that's for sure.
Yeah, people need to embrace newcomers. And I mean, I know I certainly often find myself in the ring, not usually when you have a great one, but when you have a class of just several okay dogs, leaning really hard toward the kid novice that's trying with the okay dog. I mean, you know, they may all be a six, and I couldn't make a case for any of them. I'm gonna make a case for the newcomer if I can, you know, because we need them. We need them badly.
An aging sport. You look.
We aren't. I mean, it's terrible. You go to the dog club and you look around, and it's like I'm 68. And I'm one of the youngest people in the room. That's a bad sign. That's a really bad sign. Where's the muscle in this group?
Having a nap.
it worries me. And I do think, I mean, to be a handler, one of the things that I don't see a lot of, and a breeder too, for that matter, that I don't see a lot of newcomers doing is spending time learning about what makes a good dog.
Yeah.
They want to know what it takes to win, but they don't really want to learn about structure and function and what they were bred for and why it's important for them to have more bone or less bone. And this one we had to pick up and this one we had to stand on, right? You know, so we need to know what they were for and learn to see it. I remember doing some grooming seminars for people and talking to them about, you know, well, what would you change on your dog? And they just kind of look at you blankly. Well, I just want to win. And it's like, well, you need to know what's right with your dog and what's wrong with your dog if you're going to trim it to accentuate its virtues and cover up its faults. And you ought to know that if you're going to breed it, too. You know, it's kind of important to know what's right and what's wrong with your dog. But a lot of newcomers, they really feel like the reason they're losing is their grooming or their presentation and not their dog.
Right. Or you know, being beaten by professional handlers. I hear.
But there are young professionals, I think, that just.
Oh, there's no question.
Can't tell you what's right or wrong about their dog. They just want to win.
I've had young handlers come to me and they'll bring me a dog and they'll say, what do you think? And I'll say this. And well, I can do this. I can fix this and I can fix that. I said, why don't you start off?
Or you can get a better dog.
Yeah.
Right. Here's an idea. Well, that was an approach we used to take with our clients because Mark was a good talker. I never was. So if I was going to win with a dog, I had to get the best dog I could, put it in the best shape I could, and show it the best I could, and hope that was enough. Because I didn't have the clout to twist people's arms. Or at least I didn't think I did. And, you know, we'd have breeders that would come to us with several dogs and say, well, why don't we place these four as pets and take this one and breed this one to this dog and try and get something better. And we were always trying to get something better to show, because I mean, I didn't feel like I could put over a three-legged goat. Right. Actually, there were times that I think we did, but that's not the point. But, you know, I didn't feel like we could win it. And I certainly couldn't get mad when I lost with a bad one.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you have to know what you have on the end of your lead. And so educate yourself as a young handler or a breeder. I mean, it's the same thing. It is the same thing. If you want to be a handler, you want to be a breeder, you need to learn about dogs and what you've got to start with. Don't get mad. Don't get mad when you've lost to a good dog. That's not what it's supposed to be about.
You're right, though. You have to, like you said before, they have to realize it's a good dog. And I remember being a young handler and getting frustrated and then trying to put things in perspective later on why that dog was winning so much. And when you're young, when you're like early 20s and you think you know it all, man. It's hard, but
yes,
it's hard. You learn as you get older. So
yeah, hopefully.
I remember showing a dog, and I kept losing to this certain dog consistently. And one of my very favorite judges, Maxine Beam, put this dog over the dog I was showing, and I went and asked her, and she put it later right out
told
to me.
She exactly liked
my
why.
Dog, but you know.
She tell you to put 2 pounds on it?
That too.
Some of my favorite stories are about Maxine. one time she was in there going over a class of dogs, and she gets this one up on the table, and she said, "Why do you feed this thing?" And she turns to everybody in the room and says, "Anybody have some dog food coupons?"
Well, I can hear that.
Anybody have some dog food coupons?
Oh, see, we're missing those characters, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So you're going to go for more groups.
Yes, sir.
What else is in store for Sally?
I'm probably going to not breed anymore, which is tearing me up because I've been a breeder since I was 17. And it's like, I just don't know how to stop, but I think I need to.
Why?
Well, because I've come to a hard wall in my grift breeding program. I've got a genetic issue that I can't isolate and can't test for and can't get rid of. So I either need to start all over or stop. And it seems like maybe that's a message from somewhere saying, maybe it's time you just stop. You know? So there's that. And it's hard to travel. I mean, I would like to travel more, not just to dog shows, although I love going to dog shows and seeing old friends, but also do some other traveling. And having a bunch of dogs does make that more difficult.
I do tie you down. I know it's hard. Like I said, I have my dogs, and I have to drive all around and drop them off with certain people before I leave.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you know you're imposing, and you know that you owe them for it in the end, right?
So, yeah.
And this, you know, 55 plus community, I'm supposed to only have two dogs. So naturally, as a good dog person, I'm down to four, but I'm only supposed to have two. My neighbor says, "Well, how would anybody know? They all look the same." I said, "I don't know. One of them's a rough and the others are smooth. I think most people can tell the difference." So I'm trying to get everybody placed and get down to my number two and just relax a little bit. Although I keep looking at, you know, single woman living alone with these two little tiny dogs. Maybe I should have a big dog. Maybe I shouldn't have just that. And I start looking, do I want another Irish? Maybe I'd like to have a boxer. I'm not sure. So, I don't know. It'll never stop, right?
No, I'm always amazed when I interview certain people and they haven't had a dog for years. I'm like, I never say anything, but how could they do it? I couldn't do it, you know?
I don't know.
I understand
there's times when they annoy the living daylights out of me. I tell you, on a cold night, a dog under the blankets is a really good thing.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. So. I have one more question for you, though.
Yes, sir.
If you met up with the 20-year-old Sally, is there any advice you'd give her now?
Have children younger. Don't wait till you're 40. That would be my biggest choice. You know, I don't know. It's been a good life. I don't have a lot of complaints.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's been a good life. We had adventures and we've had fulfillment and we've had success and we've had enough struggles to appreciate it. And it's been a good life. I think that's the reason that it breaks my heart to see that sort of decline in dog shows, because it's not going to offer the same to somebody in the next generation, I think, than it offered to us.
No, I think we grew up and worked in the
golden age.
Right, exactly. We got to see all these amazing people and dogs and
some of my early, back on the East Coast especially, when I really was starting, I can remember one show I was set up between Roy Holloway and Bob and Jane Forsythe and Bobby Clyder out of there. And these people, I mean, I just watched and absorbed from these people that, you know, they aren't around anymore. None of them. And
they were like rock stars to
us. They were rock stars.
Yeah. Wow.
It's been a good life. I've got no complaints.
That's good. Well, I appreciate your time, Sally, and your smile's lighting up the screen. So I love it. Great.
Thank you.
Have you had anything exciting coming up? Any assignments?
One I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh, exciting.
And no, not a lot else out. Actually, I think I just did Chintimony last weekend up in Oregon, and I don't think I have another one this year lined up yet, unless somebody bails on somebody and they call me at the last minute.
Well, your secret exciting one, I hope it's very exciting for you.
I hope so, too. I think it will be.
Oh, good. That'll be great. Well, I look forward to finding it out eventually.
I'm sure you will.
All right, Sally. All right. Great seeing you. And thank you again so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sally. It was great catching up. You look wonderful. If you like what you're seeing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget about the other podcast, The Dog Show Drive with myself and Wayne Cavanaugh. Until next week, guys, take care.